Okay. I'll start with an anecdote about Shimoto Masaru. A number of years ago, it's a nice time to have this shiur. A couple of weeks ago, I gave a drasha here in the shul, where just by way of a hook to get into the point of the drasha, I told a story by which we have raspberries growing in our backyard right here in the Zayat, and usually for many years, we get one raspberry or two raspberries. But this year, maybe because we had so much rain, Baruch Hashem, this winter, we had a big crop. So I said, for the first time, we had enough that I was able to take off a bunch of raspberries, take them inside, mafrish Shimoto Masrot, with a bracha, and my wife made some dough, and my daughter baked them into a pie. A person, if they wish to identify themselves, they can, mention that even though they have fruits and vegetables or fruits growing in their gina, they're not 100% certain that they properly execute what needs to be done for Shimoto Masrot. So the suggestion was made that we have a little practical workshop on Shimoto Masrot. There are three times that someone might encounter Shimoto Masrot. The case that people were asking about before we began, which is, you buy fruits and vegetables in our supermarket. So I mentioned that, generally speaking, our supermarkets here in Gush Etzion are all 100% A-OK kosher, and one really need not take Shimoto Masrot, even Basafek, from our supermarkets, because the mashgichim in town are on top of things. Some people, nevertheless, are machmir to be mafrish in all cases, certainly without a bracha. In days past, when the Rabbanut was unable to really make things the way they're supposed to be, so people, not just the Haredim, but certainly the Haredim, were careful to take Shimoto Masrot on all fruits and vegetables they brought into their house. That's no longer the case in the same way. Again, it depends on where you live and where you shop. But for us here in Gush Etzion, I don't believe there's any need to take Shimoto Masrot from our stores that are under Hashgacha. Our Mashgichim in town are all very good. And those of you that read in the Jerusalem Post about our friend Eliza Hochsted and her efforts and etc., all know that the stuff you buy. The second case you encounter is, once a year you go to the cherry picking, or this year they had a lot of berry picking here in Gush Etzion. So that's Tevel Vadai. It's 100% needs to have Shimoto Masrot and the other Matanot taken care of. And that's not a daily case. That's something usually you do on that Friday in June, and you go and you buy cherries. The third case, of course, is people that have a gina, and grow. In Argina we have rimonim, we have zeitim, and we have tutim. At different times we've planted, the kids plant, tomatoes or whatnot. In certain cases we'll see there's also people might grow things in pots. Even if you don't have a gina, you live upstairs in the penthouse, but on your merpeset maybe you have a pot and you grow basil or mint or, I don't know, what else might you grow? And you could grow tomatoes up there. You could grow oregano. So in those cases also, we'll see Shimoto Masrot would have to be accounted for, although obviously it's a different case because they're not growing exactly. Well, first of all, by show of hands, who has fruits or vegetables or something growing at home? All right, so that's a fair amount of you. So that certainly is tevel vadai, meaning it's 100% needs to be taken care of. But I just by way of anecdote, it's a nice time to talk about Shimoto Masrot because yesterday was the 18th anniversary of my aliyah. So I'm sure, like most of us, we seem to all be olim in the room. You came. This was something that you had a vague awareness of, but certainly something that even if you learned it in grade school in America, until you have to deal with it, it's not something that most people know. Years ago, I was working with a school. I mean, after I'd come in Aliyah, but I was doing consulting with a day school in North America, a Jewish day school, and nice school, nice grounds, and in the behind the school building, they had a vegetable patch, and the kids in the school grew vegetables, tomatoes, peppers, to teach the kids how to grow a pepper, and teach them about ecology and all those other good values. So I suggested to the Rav Beit HaSefer, I said, oh, here's a great idea. why don't you like ki'ilu, pretend that this vegetable garden, the school, is Eretz Yisrael, and you can also teach them about Trumot and Masrot, and you know Shemitah's coming up in a year or so, I said, and you can have like a mock Shemitah, and you can, and wouldn't that be a wonderful thing to do? And they looked at me like I was out of my mind. They had no idea what I was talking about. They thought it was not a good idea. So Trumot and Masrot, practical. We're just going to go through as much as we can. I'll try to highlight the things that we're not going to do. And maybe we'll have a chance to meet another time. We're not going to talk about Orla. You plant a tree, first 3 years you can eat from it. We're not really going to talk about Netaravai. In the fourth year, after the Orla, those fruits that are grown, you're allowed to eat them, but they have to be redeemed. I'm not going to get into that. Let's assume that all of the trees, the plum trees, the Shesek tree, the Rimon tree, we have in Yugina, are all older than 4 years old, and if it's not, so then you have to ask a different question. And obviously we're not going to get into the more complicated topic of Shemitah, but we still have a little time to Shemitah. Shemitah doesn't start again until September 2014. Although certain dinim of Shemitah will start the summer of 2014 beforehand. Min HaTorah. Min HaTorah. You have to take Trumot and Masrot from what? Ooh, anyone? You have these papers? There are these papers going around. You have these sheets. Min HaTorah, you have to take Trumot and Masrot from Dagan, Tirosh, V'Yitzar. From grain, from the five species of grain, from grapes and wine, and from... No. Corn. You call it corn, we call it maize. Where's corn from? Olive oil. Yitzhar is olives and olive oil. How do you know it can't be corn? Now, you said corn because when you were growing up, you davened from a sitter, maybe, that said, thy grain, thy wine, and thy corn. But what we call corn, that yellow stuff you eat on the cob, is a New World food. In Tanakh, they had no idea. It's, you know, the Indian, the American Indians. The Tanakh had, there is no corn. The word, the English word corn, as David will tell you, and he'll send you a link to his blog, the English word corn, before it became known as, you know, the yellow stuff on the cob, corn was a general word in English for grain. And in England, maybe it still is, but what we call corn, you know, now, is obviously not something from Tanakh, but Yitzhar is olives and olive oil. Only from those three categories is Trumos Maestros Min HaTorah, or Midrabanan, we take from everything that grows in the, all foodstuffs that grow in the ground. Bizman Hazeh, at least according to the Rambam, all Trumot Maestros are Dirabanan, even grain and wine and olives. That is not because Eretz Yisrael is not holy. Eretz Yisrael is holy. We paskin that when Ezra returned, after Churban Bayit Rishon, the Kedushat Haaretz was cancelled. When Ezra returned with the Olei Bavel, they re-sanctified Eretz Yisrael, and they re-sanctified it for all time. Kidshul HaShaita v'Kidshul Atid Lavo. Eretz Yisrael is still as Kedushat Haaretz, but there's a technical problem. The biblical requirement of Trumot HaMasrot applies only under the condition of Kol Yoshveha Aleha, whatever that means. Not that the entirety of the Jewish people are in Eretz Yisrael, but according to the unanimous opinion, the consensus opinion, Kol Yoshveha Aleha means the majority of the Jewish people are living in Eretz Yisrael. We have not had the majority of people living in Eretz Yisrael since Churban Bayit Rishon. But we're getting close. Now, there's a machloket rishonim, what does kol yoshvei aleha mean? What does 51% mean? Does it mean 51% of the Jewish population in the world live in the borders of Eretz Yisrael? Or a different shita, that all of the shvatim are represented. That each of the shvatim have 51% of the people living in their ancestral homeland, which obviously, at Biat HaGoel, we don't have, because 10 shvatim are unaccounted for. But according to the majority opinion, it means 51%, and the demographers tell us pretty soon, in the next number of years, that's likely going to happen, that the majority of the Jewish people will once again be living in Eretz Yisrael, and according to many Rishonim, at that point, Shemot Masoret will once again be Minat Torah. Will be Minat Torah. But in the meantime, everything is Midrabanan, although generally speaking, we treat Shemot Masoret as if it's Minat Torah. In other words, normally we say under Midrabanan, we're makel about all different types of things. If there's a suffek, it's Lakula. But generally speaking, we're machmir on Shemot Masoret as if they're Diraisa, even though they are Dirabanan. There is an opinion of the Ravid. The Ravid disagrees with the Rambam and says, no, that even now the Shemot Masoret are Minat Torah. And apparently even Rashi and Tosfot agree with him, but the halacha seems to be that Shemot Masoret b'zman hazeh, or at least for the time being, are Dirabanan. What do you have to take Shemot Masoret from? So you have a rimon growing in your backyard, so obviously that needs Shemot Masoret. Not everything that grows from the ground needs Shemot Masoret. For example, something which is grown only to give taste, but you don't eat the thing itself. Can you think of an example? Huh? Nana. Well, nana, it depends. If you grow nana, nana is very easy to grow. You can grow it on your windowsill. You can grow it in your backyard. Nana is very easy to grow. You put it in hot water, and you have tea. But you don't eat the nana. All you do is drink the flavor. In that case, the nana itself would not be chayev in Shemot Masoret. Certainly not with a bracha. A better example. But sometimes you take nana and you chop it up, and you put it into a salad. In which case, it would need Shemot Masoret. Another example? Better, most famous example of something which is only grown, you never eat it. Bay leaf. That's the best example. You never eat the bay leaf. No one would eat the bay leaf. It's bad to eat the bay leaf. But you put it into the soup or the stew and it adds flavor, and the last step in the recipe is remove bay leaf. And then serve immediately. Like the last line in every good recipe is serve immediately, which I always say is very anti-Semitic. Right? Because we want to be able to make something delicious and then serve it in 24 hours from now on Shabbat afternoon. But every recipe says serve immediately, right after you take out the bay leaf. The maisa, all of these things, the herbs and things where it's not clear whether you're eating it or you're eating the flavor, so you take without a bracha. That's always the kind of safe bet, is to be mafresh Shemot Masoret without a bracha. Because if it needs Shemot Masoret, you took them, God forbid somebody should eat without taking Shemot Masoret, because it's, even though nowadays it's Dirabanan, but first of all, Minat Torah. On Shemot Masoret that are Minat Torah, someone that eats Tevel is Chayav Mita B'dei Shemayim. It's a very severe issue. Even today, it's only Dirabanan, you're not Chayav Mita, but taking Shemot Masoret properly is a serious thing. Only things that actually grow in the ground, our backyards are all the ground. Like when we moved in, I remember when they were building our buildings, so we used to come out to visit the building being built. So there was nothing. So here, our buildings here on Yehuda HaMakabee were on the side of the mountain. And initially, we were able to drive up to the building from below before they built the road and then carved it out. So we saw that there wasn't, we couldn't understand how are they going to make a backyard. Because this was the building, and then the building like went right up to the side of the mountain that went right like this. So how are they going to build a backyard? But what did they do? They built a retaining wall, which is the wall when you drive in, you know, along your left side, and they flattened and they filled it with dirt. But underneath it, it's just rocks. So I thought maybe it's not like, is that like I had a havamina only because I didn't know anything, so it wasn't even such a good havamina. Maybe it's not even like the land of Eretz Yisrael. Maybe it's just a rock. And somebody put, maybe it's just like one big flower pot or something like that. That is not the case. That is called karka. Because all karka here, you dig down deep enough, you're gonna hit a rock. So anything that grows in our ginot, or in what's called in halachic parlance an atzitz nakuv, a flower pot with a hole in it. Chazal thought if you had a flower pot that had a hole in it, as most flower pots do for drainage of the water, and that's resting on the ground, halachically speaking, it's the ground. So if you have a flower pot with a flower in it, and it has a hole, and it's resting on the ground, on the earth, and you pick it up on Shabbat, you're chayiv for kotzer, for plucking that. It's as if you pluck that flower. Now the truth is, we have a flower pot in the Ginah that has a pot in it, and the roots, you can see it, the roots actually do grow ultimately down through the thing, and it's, you can't pick it up anymore because it's rooted deep into the soil through this hole in the flower pot. Whether it does or it doesn't, halachically speaking, a flower pot itself with a hole is so in those two cases that's real trumot masrot.
And is it
brick? So if it has a chatzitza, or if it's not, so then technically speaking it certainly would not be chayav min haTorah. Lamaisa, anything that grows outdoors. You live upstairs on the sixth floor, seventh floor. You're seven floors above the ground. But you have a pot with nana in it, or you have a pot with basil in it, or you have a pot with tomatoes growing on your merpeset. As long as it's mitachat l'kipat hashamayim, as long as it's outdoors, you have to take trumot masrot. But in that case, it would be without a bracha. Anything growing indoors, and indoors include, you know, a lot of us have the double windows, which make a nice, it's almost like a hothouse if you have the double windows. Things grow very well between those two double windows. And you can grow things in there. So if it's indoors, under the roof, so then it is not chayav b'trumot masrot. Some poskim think you should take trumot masrot. In all cases, it seems that the consensus is that for things that grow indoors, you have a pot with herbs or with who knows what growing indoors. So according to it seems the consensus of the poskim is that things growing indoors do not require, but basically anything growing outdoors does require either with a bracha if it's actually in the ground, or if it's actually in a atzitz nakuv, a perforated. A flower pot with a hole, growing, you know, on top of the ground, would require with a bracha, and anything not in an atzitz nakuv but outside on the merpeset, whatnot, as long as it's under the heavens, would require trumot masrot, but without a bracha. Without a bracha, if it's not in the ground or in this atzitz nakuv, so we take without a bite. If you have an adanit, a flower box that's hanging, or you know, they have these hanging ones that, you know, you might be seven stories up, and it's hanging outside the house so that it's hanging off the soragim or whatnot, and you drop a plumb line and it goes down to the ginav, the people seven floors below. That's outdoors. And if it's an atzitz nakuv, your neighbors downstairs don't like you because when you water the plants, it drips down on them. But even though there's seven flights between that and the ground, that's as if it's growing in the ground, according to the halakha, strange as that may seem.
Does it make a difference where the soil comes from?
No. You bring the soil from Chutzlitz, you put it in a pot here, you're in Eretz Yisrael. This issue, I'm not going to get into this, of things that, fruit that comes from Chutzlitz, it started growing there, it came here, you have fruit that started growing here, and you send it there, and it finished. That's a complicated topic, but it's not necessarily so practical for us, so I'm not going to go into that. You have tevel, you have actual food that needs trumot masrot. You have your rimonim, you have your nani, you have your whatever. You have to be careful. You go cherry picking, you come home with a nice big bowl of cherries, it's Friday afternoon, you put it down on the kitchen table, you know, before you take trumot masrot. Well, you know, if you have like a 5 or 6 year old kid walking around the house, well, they're gonna put their hand into that bowl of nice looking cherries. It's a very serious issue. You wouldn't leave a piece of chazer treif laying around. You wouldn't leave other things that are usser laying around. So it's not usser to keep tevel in your house. Sometimes you want to keep tevel in your house. My case of the raspberries. You know, you get two raspberries a day. If I leave them on the vine, the birds are gonna get them. If I take trumot masrot off of every raspberry, I'm never going to have a raspberry. So I can take the raspberries. They'll last in the refrigerator a number of days. I can take them. I can put them in Tupperware. Wait until I have, you know, a week's worth of raspberries, and then be mafrish off of all those raspberries. But I have to be careful. I have something that's usher to eat laying around the house, and it's very tasty looking. You have to put it in the fridge, put it in a bag, put a piece of tape on it that says "Do not eat this." You know, something like this. You have to be careful with the tevel that you leave laying around the house. I'll get to that. Not always. And it's hard to make a pie with that one raspberry you eat outside. Let me skip ahead then. This issue of what are you allowed to eat without taking Trumot HaMasrot. So there is this idea of achilat arai. Arai like sukkah, right? You know, kind of informal. It's less than a snack. It's less than a snack. I have a teenage son. He snacks. That's Koveya Suda. That's what, you know, people in Sudan eat for their whole year. We think anything that's not breakfast, lunch, or dinner, but the other 10,000 calories a day we eat, that's all snacking. But arai means really not being Koveya Suda on it. That's if you go out into the field. There we have this general principle that the workers in the field, or a person in his own field, what he's eating in his field, our ginot, our backyards, are not exactly a field. Our backyards are actually very much an extension of our house. Certainly in our case, they're like our, you know, a lot of us here. You know, we have, Baruch Hashem, we all have nice houses, but we have none of not mansions. When we have guests, we time our guests. Often, some of you have been there for the summer, Shabbat afternoon in the summer, because we can set up tables in the Ginah. But our living room, dining room, is really quite small. We can only fit so many people. So my wife always says, we bought a view with an attached house. Because our Ginah is really very much an extension of our home. And I know for many of you that's also the case. You know, you sit out in your Ginah, you have that nice lawn furniture, it's an extension of the house. According to Chazal, according to the Poskim, that the Ginah, what we call a backyard, is really an extension of the house. And this exemption that you can eat achilat arai does not necessarily apply. It depends on what you're growing. The case of the berries, you can eat them, but you can really only eat them echad echad. You can pluck one, you can eat it. When you're done eating it, you can pluck another one and eat it. But if you pluck one and you bring it into the house, what's called in Chazal ro'e pnei habayit, once it enters the house, then it's, even that one raspberry is chayev in trumot masrot. Now this exception that even in our backyards you can eat echad echad does not apply to all fruits. Fruits that are themselves a kind of a whole unit, according to most poskim, you couldn't do that. A rimon is not a whole fruit. It's 613 or however many garinim there are in a rimon. You can't eat a rimon arai in a ginah. According to many poskim, you can't eat an apple arai, because an apple is a whole fruit. You take it, you put it in your lunch bag, it's like a meal ready to go. So there's no such category of eating it, you know, on the go, as it were.
So what would the category?
Very grapes. Few grapes. If you take them, not a whole bunch, but one grape at a time. Cherries, if you have a cherry tree, you take one cherry at a time. Berries, one at a time. Those are, you know, those are, but the larger fruits, according to most poskim, you can't even eat them in the Ginah without taking truma.
With the cherry picking, you know, they advertise you can eat as many as you want while you're out.
Right. No, so that's different. That's a field. That's not your Ginah. The point of the Ginah is that the Ginah is kind of like your home. And once you're home, that's what's called koveya lamaser. At what point does the fruit need to be mitukan? At what point does it need to be repaired? So once you get it home, you have to. So this question, the backyard, it's kind of nishta there. That's the case we're talking about. But when you're in the field, the question, there's a different issue which I'm not going to get into now about how that works, that you're allowed to eat in the field. You know, what we kind of like the touristy. You know, pick your own cherries, pick your own apples, pick your own whatnot. There are questions about what and how much you're allowed to eat there, and how the payment works, and etc. But that's a more complicated issue. We're not gonna get into that at the second. Yeah. Yeah. So that you wouldn't need. You have Ali Dafna growing in your Ginah. So you wouldn't need Trumot HaMasrot at all, because there, that's really the case where you never eat it. You're only putting it in to add the taste. But you wouldn't even need to do it out of bracha. Ale geffen, though. You know, some people make stuffed grape leaves. Right? What? Right. So there, you take even just one ale geffen, you take one grape leaf, so that grape leaf, that one grape leaf, because you're eating the grape leaf that's stuffed with rice, so that one leaf needs to have Trimoto Masrot taken off of it. Sometimes a grape leaf is added to a recipe. Sometimes they're like pickle recipes where they tell you to add a grape leaf to the pickling because the grape leaf somehow offsets. You know, sometimes when you make pickles, it makes that, what do you call that? That gunk on the top? Right? So that would be a case where you wouldn't need to take Trimoto Masrot because you're not picking it to eat it. You're picking it in there because it has some kind of function in the pickling process or something.
The brining
process. Now, in terms of taking Trimoto Masrot, you get the stuff at home. You need to know what year it is. So what do you mean? 2012. So I'm sure you all remember from grade school, we live in a 7-year cycle, the 7th year being Shemitah. At the moment, we happen to be in the 4th year. Tafshinayin Bet is the 4th year of the cycle. We have Shemitah coming up in another. We're smack dab in the middle. The 1st, 2nd, 4th, and 5th years, you take Maser Sheni. I'll explain that in a second. The 3rd and 6th year is Maser Ani, and the 7th year, of course, is Shemitah. But you need to know what year it is for the fruit. Because depending upon what year this fruit, every piece of, you know, like the eggs have that stamp on it that tell you when it was made, right? So halavai, the fruit would also have a stamp on it. Because you need to know what the birthday of this piece of this rimon or this tomato or this whatnot is, because that's going to affect a number of things. It's going to affect which type of maaser you give. It's also going to affect, if you have a bunch of things, whether or not you can take Trimoto Masrot from different piles. Today, right now, you went out into your gina and you picked. Who has something growing in their gina right now? What's growing right now? Well, the kumquats. So you go out there right now. So right now you know that they are from the 4th year. Right now you know they're from the 4th year because...
By the way, they're in a pot on a manhole.
In a pot on a manhole. Hmm. And it never gets moved? It's like a very heavy pot?
It's probably going to get moved come winter because it's not going to survive where it is.
But even then... So you certainly have to take, whether you take, probably without a bracha, but you certainly have to take Trimoto Masrot. But let's say you have 2 piles of fruit. I was hoping somebody was going to bring actual fruit and you'd actually be mafresh. You have 2 piles of fruit. This is Lego fruit. This fruit is from the previous year, and this fruit is from this year. It looks exactly the same. They both look like piles of whatever it is, tomatoes or apples. You have to do 2 separate hafrashot. You can't be mafresh from one year on the fruits of a different year, because they're two different crops.
When you say of the year, so if it's like an apple growing now, let's say pick them now, some are ready now, some will say we're ready after Rosh Hashanah.
Yafeh. So what do we mean by the year? The year is not, should old acquaintance be forgot, January 1st. The year is not even necessarily what we call Rosh Hashanah, because we all know, being good Zionists, that Rosh Hashanah, La'ilan, is Tu B'Shvat. So that the early Tzionim, the pioneers, got their hands on Tu B'Shvat and turned it into a whole kind of Chalutzim type of thing. Anybody that knows anything about agriculture will tell you the last day of the year any sane person would plant a tree is on Tu B'Shvat. The reason Tu B'Shvat is Tu B'Shvat, the reason Tu B'Shvat is this kind of line of demarcation between the trees of last year and the trees of the next year is because it's the time of the year when there ain't a whole lot of fruit on the trees. You want to choose a line of demarcation which in nature is going to be very clear. You're not going to do it in the middle of the season because it's going to be impossible. If we told you right now you have this tree full of hundreds of rimonim or hundreds of kumquats, and tonight at midnight is the border between last year and how are you going to which is from next year, right? You choose a date when there's nothing on the tree, and then anything that's going to grow after Tu B'Shvat is obviously for the coming year, and anything that was on the tree from before Tu B'Shvat is the year before. is the year before. Certainly, and we're lucky, we live in a place in the world where nature and Torah coincide, right? Where the laws of the Torah correspond with how our trees generally work. Tu B'Shvat, look around here. There's anybody that has fruit trees, there's not going to be anything on the fruit trees, right? You'll first have, you'll start, the first sign of the spring will be Hashkedi HaPorachat.
But you say year four is Tavshanai. Tavshanai is year four.
But it's not.
Tavshanai Gimel.
Right. Correct. In other words, right now I have Rimonim on my tree. We say for trees, once the fruit undergoes the phase called Chanata, which in modern Hebrew means probably like ripening, but in halachic Hebrew that's not what it means. Chanata means the stage at which the fruit begins to take its prepubescent form. Where it's obvious, anybody that would see this would recognize this is a Rimon in formation, but it's not yet a Rimon. You're not going to eat it.
Baby Rimon.
Baby Rimon. But there's a stage. From the moment that the fruit reaches this stage of chanata, where it's visible as fruit, even though it's not yet ready or not yet ripe, so then we say, what year is it? Well, right now, when did the Rimonim start? They started a couple weeks ago, because so that by Rosh Hashanah time, they'll be in their height. So those Rimonim that we're going to eat on Rosh Hashanah, they were all formed during the fourth year. Let's imagine, for the sake of clarity, let's turn back the clock a year. Let's imagine we're now talking, it's summer 2011. Let's pretend it's summer 2011 right now. It's a year ago. So the Rimonim that are on our tree right now, July 2011, they're Rimonim of Maaser Ani, because it's the third year. The day on Tzom Gedalia, it's already going to be Tavshanayin Bet. It's going to be the next calendar year. And there's still Rimonim on the tree. And I'm going to pick them after Sukkot still. But those Rimonim that are on the tree, even though technically right now I look at my watch, it's the fourth year, which year are those Rimonim part of? The third year.
So it always counts when they began to be recognizable.
So it depends on what we're talking about. So for fruit trees, generally speaking, and remember we're Jewish, so there's always going to be an exception to the rule. For fruit trees, it's when the fruit gets formed, according to most opinions. If it formed after Tu B'Shvat, it's Shayach to that year. If it was from before Tu B'Shvat, so then it was from the previous year. That's for Perot Ilan. Anybody have any citrus fruit growing? Well, those lemons. So citrus fruit is a big machlokas. Whether we say it goes according to the chanata, when the fruit is formed, or whether it goes according to when you pick it. So if you're in the overlap period, so when do the lemons form? Now, yeah? Correct? So clearly it's part of the fourth year. Until next Tu B'Shvat, it's part of this year. But if there are lemons, does it ever happen that you'll have lemons on the tree after Tu B'Shvat? Or does the season not work that way? In theory, if you had old lemons on the tree after Tu B'Shvat from the previous year, I don't think it happens, and you pick them afterwards, so then you'd be in this gray zone, and it wouldn't be clear which year it was. But again, most of the fruits and vegetables that we have growing around this part of the world, this is not such an issue. It's going to be much clearer what year it's part of. I think the one complicated thing is, anybody have shesek growing? Loquats? They're really a disgusting fruit. Because they have all of those like slimy pits in them. It's like the clown car at the circus. You can't understand how they fit that many pits into that one fruit. And they're all slimy. I mean, not that I want to say bad things about the Perot Eretz Yisrael. But, yeah, okay. Shesek is a problem because it ripens over a long period. But since none of you have them, we don't have to worry about that. However,
but
what? Etrog is also etrog we say it goes according to when you pick it. Etrog, that's the Gemara we learn that Gemara. It's the Gemara in we learn that Gemara in Kedushin.
I'm confused about how we line up the 7-year cycle with the
so again, for trees, so if in this year, in our year, the fourth year, you have Myri Monim, they are forming after Tu B'Shvat of the fourth year. They are going to be shayach to the fourth year. And even if I pick them during after Rosh Hashanah on the fifth year, they are still shayach to the fourth year. And I can't be mafrish those rimonim on rimonim from the third year or from the next year. And they would be my sasheni. In this case, it's less of a... Here, it's two... It's two. Right, but the two things are not completely aligned.
Right.
So that's why there's a Tu B'Shvat. Any fruit on a fruit tree from before Tu B'Shvat, that means it would have already started before Rosh Hashanah, because fruit doesn't grow here in Eretz Yisrael, at least not in our Ginot. If you have a hothouse, if you have some other thing, so then it's more complicated. But for the regular person at home living in the Judean Hills, it's not going to happen. You're not going to have fruit on fruit trees in December that hadn't been formed already from the previous year. That would have been shayach to the year before. In the modern, you know, we're used to, certainly in America, it's always, whenever we go to America, it's always like remarkable. Like you go into the, there are no seasons. All the fruit is available all the time. Every apple looks, you know, perfect and unblemished. Every tomato looks perfect and unblemished. And they all have no taste. You know, here you go to the shuk. Some of these things look like they came out of a science fiction movie, you know, these tomatoes with noses on them and etc. But they're all delicious. But there are times where you can't get, you know, here you go to the restaurant and, you know, on every menu, in every Halavi cafe, it's avocado ba'ona. Right? Because you can get it during certain times and you can't get it during other times. But in America, you can get avocado all year long. It just doesn't taste very good. But so for those of us that aren't doing any kind of genetic engineering in our backyards, so it's going to be pretty clear, you know, what it is. And if not, so then you check it out and you find out what's what. However, yeah?
About, I mean, maybe I have a question about that one, but like, let's say, now I'm Tavshana in bed, and since Rabbi Rosh Hashanah, not the Tavshana anymore, so the one is Tu B'Shvat, we'll be turning around to, like, finally it'll be Tavshana anew.
No, in other words, on Tu B'Shvat, Tavshana and Gimel, next January 2013,
right.
There aren't going to be any fruit on the trees, and any fruit that might be on the tree will have already formed
before.
Right.
That I understand. Right. But which year does it line up? Is it the year before, or is it the year?
No, and if it reaches this stage of being formed before Tu B'Shvat, it's retroactive for the previous year. And if it reaches that stage after Tu B'Shvat, so then it's for the forthcoming year. That this is true for fruit trees. It's not true for fruits and vegetables. You have tomatoes growing in your gina. So for tomatoes, generally speaking, we say it goes after when you pick it. There are some shitot that it goes after that the kvi'ah, the determination of what it's connected to, when it's connected to, has to do with when it reaches full ripeness. But according to most poskim, it has to do with when you pick it. So you have tomatoes on a vine, you pick one Erev Rosh Hashanah, and then you pick one Motzei Rosh Hashanah, it's two different hafreshot. You can't be mafresh one on the other. If you're not sure, so then you certainly should be mafresh both. Yeah, yeah. You could say one bracha, on both of them, but you have to go through the hafresha process twice.
What about this institute or whatever in Mea Sharm that you can join, and they give you this card, and
yeah,
you say one sentence on the card?
Yeah, but you still have to take Trumot HaMasorot. I'll come to that in a second when we go through the actual hafresha. I'm sorry?
I would give a list of what...
So I'm telling you now. Oh, no, if it's there. Oh, that's a good question. Do they have such a list? I'm not.
I'm not sure.
For Shemitah, that's something else. It's not. That's when it ends being in the shuk. That's when it ends being in the shuk. So I'm telling you now, vegetables. I'm sorry, I should have made a chart. Vegetables goes according to when it's picked, and the new year for that is Aleph Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah. Fruit trees, it goes after the stage called Chanata, when it ripens. When it forms, when it forms, and that's Tu B'Shvat. Chanata. We should get a blackboard. Peter, we should get a blackboard. Grapes and olives. Anybody here have grapes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Grapes and olives go after a stage called Hava'at Shlish, when they're about a third of the way of their growth. When is that exactly? You have to ask someone who knows. But generally speaking, because of the seasons that grapes and olives grow, it's not a shaila, because you don't have grapes and olives on Tu B'Shvat, which is the birthday for grapes and olives. So anything that happens after Tu B'Shvat, the crop that grows during the summer after Tu B'Shvat, is going to be shayach to that year. And Perot Hadar, citrus fruit, is a machloket, whether you go after the Chanata, when the fruit is formed, or when after it's picked, and that's that deadline is similarly Tu B'Shvat. The fruits only become chayav in Shemot HaMasrot once you're done doing the process, once you're doing the work. That's a little clearer out in the field in the industrial farm setting. For us, sometimes you only want to pick one rimon. When you pick that rimon and you bring it into your house, that's the Gemar Melacha. I had an interesting question. I called... there's this institute. There are a few different institutes that deal with all of these things. There's a number of years ago, when we were still in the caravan, we brought Rav Reichberg. He's Rav Efrati's, right-hand man. Rav Efrati is not Rav Efrati from Zayed Ra'anan. I don't think they're related. Is like the posek on matters of Trumot and Masrot. And his right-hand man is a guy named Rav Reichberg. They run this thing in Har Nof called the Machon Limudei Mitzvot HaTluyot Ba'aretz, which is part of the Beit Midrash Gevoa LaHalacha VeHityashvut. And they had these nice svarim. I looked around. I would have assumed they'd be like an art scroll style English, guide to Truman and Master. Could be that there isn't one. I don't. Does anybody know of any such thing? These little pamphlets.
We have a stack of them in our shop. Truman and Master pamphlets.
No, those are the pamphlets, but not a full book that goes through all of the halakha in English. To the best of my knowledge, I don't think we. I don't think there is one in English. But this book, if anybody wants to buy one book, it's in Ivrit. It is Mishpatei Aretz. It's a series of books on all the mitzvot of Aretz. And this is one. This is the volume just on Shemot u'Masrot. And it's a very handy, if you can handle the Hebrew, if you need to look up a specific shaila, it's one book that I recommend. So I called Rav Reichberg, and I asked him the following shaila. You only take Shemot u'Masrot after the work is done. We have a principle that's true if the work is done in the field, or where the fruit is grown. But if for some reason you have your tree in a pot, let's imagine it's atzitz nukuv on the ground, a kol adeos etzchai. It starts growing outdoors, but then you bring the tree inside, and it finishes growing indoors, and you do the picking indoors. It would be putter from Trumot u'Masrot. According to some opinions, in all cases you'd still take Trumot u'Masrot without a bracha, but because the gemar malacha is done indoors. So what about the following case, which is very common to anybody that grows tomatoes? What happens? The tomatoes form, they're fully formed, but they're still green and rock solid. So what do? You pick them, you bring them inside, you put them in a brown paper bag. You look at me like I'm crazy. I'm from New Jersey. This is like mother's milk. This is how you grow up in New Jersey, right? And in the paper bag traps the gases. What kind of gas does the ripening tomato let off?
CO2.
No. And that traps it, and it ripens in the bag. Is that called gemar malacha betoch habayit? So he said, l'chore it would be. L'chore it would be, and certainly you wouldn't say a bracha, but according to many opinions, you take Truman Masrot without a bracha. Achilat arayah we already talked about. Now in terms of
you take that pomegranate into the house.
Yeah.
Let's say you just have the one, but the others haven't. So how do you practically? How do you take from a maser when you're four?
We'll show you. We'll show you. Here's our fruits. There are four different matanot that we give. Again, we're not talking about a revai, the fourth year. We're not talking about orla. We're not talking about shmita. There's truma, or what's called truma gedola, which goes to the once upon a time went to the kohen. There's meiser, or what we call meiser rishon, which goes to the
to the levi.
There's trumat meiser, which is a kind of double tax. Before you give the meiser to the Levi, the meiser itself contains truma. So before you give the meiser to the Levi, you have to take out the truma that's hidden in the meiser, so that when the Levi gets his meiser, it's good to go. It's clean. It's already had the meiser. It's already had the truma removed. That's called trumat meiser. And then, depending upon the year, you either give Meiser Sheni. Who gets the Meiser Sheni? You do. It's yours. But it has special dinim. I'll talk about that in a second. Or Meiser Ani. Who gets the Meiser Ani?
The Ani.
And even Aniim have to give Meiser Ani. An Ani has fruit that needs Trumot Maserot. Even he has to give. A Kohen has to take Trumot Maserot. Right? Even though it's his Truma. A Levi has to take Truma Maserot, even though it's his Meiser. The food has to be mitukan. It has to be fixed. It has to go through this process regardless of who's getting it, and if it doesn't, you're not allowed to eat it. Children, mitachat labar mitzvah, or bat mitzvah, cannot do Truma Maserot. If they do, so they haven't really done anything. And generally speaking, we say that if children, for chinuch purposes, if they do a mitzvah, so it's like a mitzvah for them. They shake a lulav, it's like their lulav. They sit in the sukkah, it's theirs. They should eat matzah because they have to learn to do the mitzvot. But here, Trumot Maserot, if a child under the age of bar mitzvah, certainly younger than within a year of bar mitzvah, but even generally speaking, under the age of bar bat mitzvah, if a child does Trumot Maserot, their act has no effect, and therefore the food is still kevel, and it's also for them to eat it, and certainly it's also for everyone else to eat it. You can teach it. When you come home from the cherry picking, you should gather the family around and show them what you're doing and explaining it, but you can't let a kid do the Trumot Maserot. It's also important that you do, you have these sheets, where these, everybody has one of these sheets? Right? Were there enough? Are there more? There's more. The Seder, the order in which you do it, is important. These are not random things. And if it's not done in the order, either it's bad or it's worse. Meaning either you did it wrong, or you as if didn't do it at all, and you could be left still with some trumot still in the fruit. You're not allowed to take truma. You're not allowed to take truma on fruit that's still on the tree. Like, in other words, let's say you have my raspberries. Like, I can't pick one or two, take truma to masud from them, on behalf of the fruit that I'm going to continue picking the next couple of days. It has to all be there. And when you take the truma to masud, it has to be called what's called min hamupa. If you want to move closer to see the fruits here on the table, it has to all be kind of gathered in one place. You can't take Trumot Maserot, certainly not lechatchila, from some fruit over here, some fruit over there, some in the next room. It has to be called what min hamukaf. It should all be preferably all gathered up
the same thing.
Together. It doesn't all have to be the same thing, as we'll see in a second. But you're not
apples and oranges and peaches and plums.
And you can do one process for different minim, different species, but it has to be accounted for in the in the procedure, as you'll see in a second. You can't be mafresh from an apple on behalf of an orange. But you can go through, if you have a pile of apples and a pile of oranges and a pile of pears, you can do one procedure, taking out some apple, some orange, some pear, one bracha on everything. But and again, like I said, you can't be mafresh from the fruit that belongs to one crop, one year, on fruit that belongs to a different year. Lichatchila, you can't be mafresh the bad fruits. In other words, what happened in the days of old, when they actually gave the food to the Kohanim and to the Levim and to etc. So, you know, you go cherry picking, you know, so there's some very nice looking cherries, like the kind that like appear on the poster, you know, like they're all shiny, and then you have some that look a little, you know, like the worm went through them. So you can say, well, I'm going to give him the wormy one. So lechatchila, you are not allowed to be mafresh from the yucky kind. Nowadays, that the truma doesn't go to the kohen, but it basically gets thrown out, so you're allowed to be mafresh lechatchila even on the yucky ones, as long as it's still edible. If it's not edible, then it's not food. And just like I wouldn't be able to be mafresh on a rock, so you can't be mafresh on that. But as long as it's still edible, so you can be mafresh off the less nice ones. If it's not edible, then it's garbage. You throw it away.
No, but let's say it's not, you give it to an animal or something. But you mean you could do, or you could use it for people. Are you allowed to have any benefit from this? I remember a kibbutz that we had an issue with, like, they would feed the cows a melon. And they had, like, a thing for them. And I never knew exactly whether you were allowed to go and take, if you could do two or less of the things
to feed the cows. I'm not sure. So the first thing is the truma. The truma goes to the kohen. Minat Torah, there's no shi'ur for truma. Even one, you have a silo full of grain. Even one kernel is enough truma for the whole silo of grain. Midrabanan, Chazal said, again, talking about times when the kohanim would actually get... Any kohanim here?
My husband.
Well, no, so you're also a kohen for these purposes. Because an Ashes Kohen gets to eat the truma.
The
barbecue is meat. That's got nothing to do with this. I mean, there's a matanot kohanim from the meat also, but that's not.
Why don't you give the
maaser
to the kohen?
Maaser, because maaser belongs to the Levim.
Or to the Levim.
We'll get to we're only up to truma. We're going to go a little over. Marv's at 9:30. We're going to go a bit over. So we're good. So truma, a kohen, in order to eat truma, first of all, only a kohen and his family, meaning an eshet kohen and his children and his daughters, while they're still in his house until they go off and marry kohanim of their own, or they opt out of the truma gig and marry a Levi Yisrael. Only they are allowed to eat truma. It's also for anyone else to eat truma, and truma has to be eaten b'tahara, when you're pure, when the truma is pure, and when the kohen is pure. Nowadays, we don't have anybody that's pure, so no one can eat it, and therefore, Chazal said in the times when people would really eat it, the she'ur for truma is at best 1/40. The middle shear is 1/50th, and minimally 1/60th, but we don't go according to those shearim since it's all going into the garbage anyway, and a kol shehu, even a fraction of a percent, is enough truma to take care of the truma for the whole thing. A kohen cannot feed his guests truma, no. I was just learning something with my daughter about this. It would be like the equivalent, lahavdil, of now, you know, you're Sfardim. And Rachmanis, your daughter goes off and marries an Ashkenazi. And they come for Pesach. So you have to be careful not to make the things with the kitniot. Right? So, same thing. You're a Kohen, your daughter marries Rachmanis, a Nachshlefer Yisrael, right? So they come for Shabbos. So not only can't you give them any truma, But the food you cook for them has to be from the pots that aren't the trumadik pots. Because if you cook truma in a pot, that pot becomes trumadik. Like we have fleishich and milchik, kohanim would have trumadik. And maybe they'd even have trumadik fleishich and trumadik milchik. Right? So it'd be a hassle. It'd be a real hassle. What? I said lav is worse than kitniot as a minogan. Here's a real issa min haTorah. So the truma. So nowadays we don't. When we're done with the whole process and you're left with this little bit of truma, so no one can eat it, and it has to be disposed of. Either it has to be buried, which we don't do because that's a big hassle, or you can, like we do with kedushat shviit, you wrap it up, you double wrap it up in aluminum foil or saran wrap, so that you don't just merely throw it out because it's still kadosh. Say a little bit kavod before you throw it away. That's meiser. That's meiser sheni. We're gonna get to that. Meiser rishon. How much do you have to give for meiser rishon? 10%. Meiser is from lashon eser, right? 10% to the levy. Now you take off. I don't know. Here's your fruit. We imagine we've already done the truma. You take off, I don't know, about 10% for the levy. But what happens?
10% of that.
This is 10%. Here's the whole crop. I take off 10% for the levy. In this meiser, there's a drop of truma. I have to take off 10% from this. The truma meiser isn't a kol shehu. It's 10%. It's 10% of the 10%. That was left over after you took the drop for the truma. That's the obligation of the mafrish before he gives the meiser to the levy, so that when the levy gets the meiser, it's clean. However, nowadays, if you want, you're growing, you have remote. You know, these people that have these shesakim, my brother-in-law, they have shesakim, and they have plums. You know, you get like millions of them. You can't get rid of them fast enough, right? If you have one of these trees that puts out a lot of fruit, so it's not a big deal to give 10. You'd be happy to give 20% to the.
So today,
it's not so hard. Here's a levy. You're a levy, right? I used to be a levy. You're a levy. I used to be a levy. You get a lot of. You know, in our shul we have this interesting thing. We have this musical chairs. I used to be a levy. I discovered I'm a Yisrael. He used to be a Kohen, he discovered he's a Levi. Corey Beinacker used to be Israel, he got an upgrade, today he's a Kohen. So we all switched around. You know, that's the way it is in the modern world.
But, you know, you need to find a Levi, and if you don't have a Levi.
Everybody has a Levi. So it doesn't matter, it's not Kadosh, it's just his, unlike Truma, Meiser is not Kadosh. Anyone can eat meiser. It's just the property of a levy. You can choose which levy you like. If you have a levy who's your friend, you can give it to him, right? You don't have to. A levy can't make a claim on you. You can choose who you want to give it to. You can also choose which coin to give the truma to. However, and then if the levy says, "Oh, that looks very nice, but I don't really like that," you know what? Thank you very much. I'm giving it back to you as a gift. Bakasha, you can keep it. No. For mice, you actually take off.
But do you actually have to give it to a levy?
You have to go find
a levy. In principle, you have to give it to a levy. However, nowadays, there are no levyim. The fact that these three guys get a lot more aliyahs than I do, right, is a minug. We have no more yichus. None of them can prove that they're levyim. Vehoraya, he used to be a Kohen. I used to be a Levi.
So
practically speaking, we say this is not a matter of kedusha; it's a matter of finances. We say this is the property of a Levi. Hamotzi mechavero alav haraya. If you can prove to me that you're a Levi, you're entitled to come and take this. Since no Levium can do that today, so then the general practice is that people keep the meiser for themselves. There is. You have to set it aside. Why?
Set it aside.
You set it aside. Well, in practice, we don't actually set it aside, but it has to be designated as Meiser. Why? Because hidden in the Meiser is
truma.
A bit of truma. And that has to be removed. And until that's removed, the whole thing is usher to eat. But in practice, you want to give. You know, we have in our backyard, you have shisakim growing, you've got hundreds of them, you can't get rid of them fast enough. Bakasha, give 10% to a levy. It's always easy to find a levy. But in, yeah. Yeah, so I think the companies say,
these companies are basically just taking up truma and truma and maser, and that's it.
Correct.
Everything else, they repossess
from them. Well, except for the use of maser ani. Maser ani has to be given. Yeah, we'll go through the nusach in a second. Yes. So take out the nusach. Well, we don't physically set it aside, but we designate it. That's what we say. The 10% that's on the. So exactly, we do like this. Here, this sheet, the two red columns just explain what everything is, but the actual hafrasha is just this blue column. You take this, you hang it up, and so here's your pile of whatever it is. Let's say it's these apples. You take off, you see it says, lukhim me'at yoter mime'it, a drop more than 1%. You take 1.01%. Let's say, for the sake of argument, I don't know, this one piece is 1.1% of the whole thing. You're not exactly sure how much it is. Look, if you have a scale, so you can weigh it. But, you know, you eyeball it and you err a little bit on the side of a little bit more. You separate off the 1%. If you are doing from Tevel Vadai, from the stuff growing in the ground in your gina, now you say a bracha. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Kedeshanu B'mitzvotav V'tzivanu L'hafrish Trumot Masro. And now here's the procedure of the hafresha. What is this 1.1%? What's this made up of? No. The 0.1% is the truma. Or the 0.01% is the truma. Right? Because truma needs only a tip-tipa. The 1% is going to be the trumat maser, the 10% of the 10. What's 10% of 10%? 10% of 10% is 1%. Right? You have to take off 10%. The maser is 10% of the whole thing. From that maser, you have to take off 10% for the trumat maser. That's how you get 1.1%. The 1% is the trumat maaser, and the point whatever is the teensy bit that will be the truma. Together, the truma and the trumat maaser constitute a drop more than 1% of the entirety.
You don't actually have to set aside that trumat maaser.
No.
You do.
You are doing that. You're doing it proactively. Here, watch. You take this 1.1% and you put it on the side.
You have to put aside the maaser so you can take.
No. Well, you are doing that by designating certain regions of this pile. Right? And then you say, there are different, every nusach of the hafrasha is slightly different, but lo mishneh. If you use the one in the sitter, if you use the one here, they all do the same. The hafrasha is not davening. Right? It's a declaration. So you should understand what you're saying. You should understand what you're saying when you daven also. But here it's important to understand what you're saying. If you don't understand the Hebrew, you should recite it in English in order to understand what you're doing. In the Art Scroll Siddur, I think they have the Nusach HaFrasha. In the, certainly in the New Koran Siddur, they have the Nusach HaFrasha. So you say, Hamei tanim tse'it betachtit shel mashe inachti betzad tisha'er bentayim tevel. Right? The 1%, In the meantime, I'm leaving that as tevel. That will later become the trumat maaser. Shar mashe nachti betzad harei hu truma gedola. The 0.1% that's the truma gedola. That's the real truma. You see, that's the little red speck on the apple in the picture. And then maaser rishon. You say, hamei sheizcharti the 1% that was left here on the side, which is this thing I set on the side, everything except for the teensy bit that I already made truma, so that the little bit here, the 1% here, v'od tisha chalakim, and another 9/10 that are here, b'tzad ha'elyon. In other words, you don't actually physically separate it out, but you designate, you say the north side or the south side. You know, in this nusach they say b'tzad ha'elyon. 9/10 on the upper part of this pile, and at this point you should be careful not to move the stuff around because you're going to mix it all up. So that is meiser. So now you have meiser. Where's the meiser? One part is here, and 9 parts are here. 1 + 9 = 10. So what do you have to do now? So let's say you're not going to give it to the Levi. But what do you have to do still? You have to remove in this meiser that you've designated, you have to remove the bit of truma that's there. Where is that trumat meiser? Well, 10% of the meiser is 1%. Where's that 1%? It's here, connected to the teeny bit of truma. Hamea shehizkarti hari hu trumat maser. So now you have this 1.1% which you had set aside. You've designated it as the truma. You have then designated what's the meiser, and you've made the 1% here the trumat meiser. This is kulo truma. You eat it, you're dead. You wrap it up, and you set it aside. Now you have meiser sheni.
The little part of that you set aside.
No, this 1.1% is all truma. The 0.1% is the truma gedola, and the 1% is a tenth of the meiser, which has become trumat meiser. You've removed the truma that the Levi would have to take out from his meiser. And you're not allowed to give the meiser to the Levi until you've done that, and certainly if you keep it for yourself, you're not allowed to.
In other words, Judaism requires a degree in mathematics.
Mathematics, this is Torah Umada. This is, we're modern Orthodox Jews, right? Here it is. It's agriculture, and it's nature, and it's mathematics, and it's commerce, and it's...
Is the Levi have to, say, do a bit about the meiser?
If a Levi has trumot, has fruit, then he has to go through the whole procedure like anyone else. He can keep the meiser for himself, but he has to go through everything. Yeah, because he has to take out the trumat meiser from his meiser, because he's not a Kohen. He's not allowed to do it. Even a Kohen has to do this. Doesn't matter. Everybody has to go through the same procedure. Now there's meiser sheni. Again, depending on what year it is, either you have meiser sheni or you have meiser oni. What's meiser sheni? Meiser sheni is the fruit, another tenth off of what's left. You've already taken off 10.1%, even though the meiser we end up keeping the rest of the meiser. But from what's left, then you need another 10%. That's meiser sheni. That's your own. What do you have to do with your meiser sheni? In the times of Beit HaMikdash, you take it up to Yerushalayim and you'd eat it in Yerushalayim. If you lived in Efrat in the times of the Mikdash, you didn't have a car, you didn't go to Yerushalayim all that often. There was no Hasa'at Harachotzvim every day. Right? So, and you also didn't have a refrigerator. So by the time you got that fruit to Yerushalayim, it'd be pretty yucky. And there was a lot of it. So what would you do? You could be podet. You could redeem. You could transfer the kedusha of the Maaser Sheni to money. And then you take that money is now kadosh, and you can take it, you take it to Yerushalayim, and you buy fruits with that money and eat that in Yerushalayim. It just makes it easier to transport your fruit by converting it into money. When you do this pidyon, this transference of the value to money, you have to add a chomesh. You have to add another portion. What? Not five, a fifth part. You have to add, basically it's 25%. A chomesh isn't 20%, it's 25% of the thing. So let's say you have something that's worth $4. So you have to transfer that to $5. The thing itself plus another quarter, meaning a fifth part. And then you take that money. And you buy fruit or other...
I got my one pomegranate.
Yeah?
I've taken through my master, and then I got to do master thing.
Yeah? No, so Maisa Sheni, what you do is you transfer the value to the money and then you eat it. So what's the, how do you figure out the value? And we'll also need to know the value for Maisa Ani, LaMaisa. The value is not what the pomegranate would cost in the supermarket, because in the supermarket there's a markup for, it has to be shipped, it has to be packaged. So how this is done exactly is not clear, but it's less than whatever the the value of the fruit is that day in the supermarket. If you, you know. But nowadays, when you're podeh the Maaser Sheni, nowadays we can't eat Maaser Sheni because we are not tahor. So we only are podeh it, and since we have to be podeh it, we can't then take that money and buy the food that you buy in Yerushalayim also has to be eaten when you're tahor. So since we can't do any of this, we're podeh it not on its value. You don't need to know the value today. You're podeh it on a pruta. What's a pruta? A pruta is the smallest financial value. A pruta is 1/40th of a gram of silver. So how do you know how much a pruta is worth? So you Google, how much is a gram of silver worth? Today, silver is selling, right now, today, silver is selling for 88 cents a gram. 1/40th of that is 2.2 cents a gram. According to the Shaar Yatzig, a pruta is 8.7 agarot.
So 10 agarot.
So, but that's not so practical. Because once you're podeh it on the coin becomes kadosh. So you take a coin, 5 shekels, with 5 shekels, at the current value of a pruta plus the chomesh, you have to have this 25% markup, so it comes out to be 10.8 agarot. So if you set aside a 5 shekel coin, you'll be able to do 45-46 pidyonot. On a 5 shekels. And that will last you for one cycle. It'll last you for years 1, 2, and 3, and then for 4, 5, and 6. Those,
you take a 5 shekel piece.
I take a 5 shekel piece, and I masking tape it to the inside of the kitchen cabinet. And I write on it, Maaser Sheni.
But you should replace that.
So then, twice every Shemitah, those of you who were here on Pesach, I gave a nice shiur on Biur Masrot. A mitzvah most people never heard of. Biur Masrot is twice every Shemitah, you have to clear house. I'm not going to go into that now. It's not going to happen again until the last day of Pesach 2015. It happens on the last day of Pesach of the fourth year, in which you do it for the first 3 years, and the last day of Shemitah, the last day of Pesach during Shemitah on years 4, 5, and 6. Check back with me in spring 2015 how you clear out this coin. If you have a lot of hafreshot, so you should maybe like keep track of how many times you've been mafresh on this one coin. I set aside 5 shekels. That's more than enough for me for three years.
Have a
5 or 10
shekel piece there.
Yeah. So go back here. Now you have to be careful not to lose this coin, because once you've loaded it up with the pidyon, so it can't be used for anything else. You can't use it to your kid says, "Oh, I need 10 shekels tomorrow for the tiyul," and it has to be exact change. You can't take that coin and give it to her, and say, "I'll replace it with a different one." I told you, check back with me in 2015, right? There's a procedure that has to be done. But if it is full up and you need more, so then you take another coin and tape that up next to it.
What do you do with that?
I told you, check back with me, Pesach 2015. It's a different shit.
I mean, when you're doing Maaser Sheni, I put the coin aside.
So Maaser Sheni, so here, you see, it says Maaser Sheni, Maaser Ani. So then you say, the last thing here. Od tisha me'iyot, another 9/10, but sada tachton shel mashe britzoni letakein, harei hein maaser sheni. Right? If it's a maaser sheni year. If it's a maaser ani year, say, v'im hein chayavod maaser ani, harei hein maaser ani. So let's assume it's a maaser sheni year. So then you have to do chil ma'isa sheni. If it's tevel vadai, you say a bracha, right? Here in the blue box. Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu melech haolam, asher kidshanu b'mitzvah tevet zivanu lefdot maser sheni. And you, with that, have transferred the kedusha to the money, and now the ma'isa sheni, you can eat. This coin, what if you only have one kumquat or two berries, which are not worth a shave pruta? So in order to inaugurate the coin the first time, you have to be podes something which is at least a shave pruta. For technical reasons, I won't go into it now. There's also an issue that you really shouldn't use the same coin for pidyon of different levels. This is really practical only for people who have grapes. Grapes, again, are chayav min haTorah. I mean, they're a different level, even though today everything is derabanan. But grapes are min haTorah and berries are midirabanan. So maybe you should have two coins, one for the things that are chayav min haTorah and one for the things that are chayav midirabanan. But during the Maaser Ani years, so Maaser Ani taka, really, you do have to give. So, for us, you have, again, if you have one of these plum trees, you got 1,000 plums, you can't get rid of them fast enough. So take 10% of what's left after you've done Truma and Maaser Rishon, and you put them in a bag, and you walk them over to the Makolet, and there's that very nice lady who sits there, Rachmanis, she's an Aniyah, and you say, Shabbat Shalom, here, have some plums. And maybe she would. You want to give her money, you can also give her money, but you can give her plums.
What do you mean, what do you do with the plums?
So she takes the plums and she eats them, she gives them to her kids, or she throws them in the garbage. No. You give her the plums. Either she wants the plums or she doesn't want the plums.
What do I do with these plums? Can I eat them? I mean, I give money instead to the...
It belongs to the aniim. Who's an ani for these purposes? Ani for these purposes is anybody who's not, you know, doesn't have everything set up in terms of their parnasa, in terms of providing enough for themselves and their families. You don't need to ask them for their bank balance. But what you can do, since probably she doesn't want your plums, and she certainly doesn't want my 1/10 of one raspberry, I wouldn't even know how I would bring it to her, you can set up an account. It would be better if your ani knows about it, but even if they don't know about it, it would work. You can guesstimate how much value in Maaser Ani you're going to be giving that year. And again, here, you kind of do need a sense of what's the value of plums, and guesstimate erring on the side of a little bit more. And at the beginning of the season, you give the ani or the aniyah, whatever it is, 20 shekel, 50 shekel, 100 shekel, and you stipulate that it's really, what it really is a loan. Or it's a mikdama, it's a down payment on all of the maaser ani that you have for the year. And you should probably keep a little ledger, a little on an index card taped to the inside cabinet, where you subtract, you know, more or less, the value of for each hafrasha that you do. And again, it'd be better if they knew and understood what it was. But even if they didn't, it would work that you've paid the value to the ani in money, because they don't want your half a pomegranate or your quarter of an apple. But then you can subtract that value from what you paid in advance, and that's a practical way to deal with my sermon.
Let's say I estimate that my pomegranates are worth 200 shekels. Right? And so if I take 20 shekels and say, this I'm designating as Maaser Ani, and I'm giving it to a poor person, am I covered?
Yeah. Well, you're not designating it as Maaser Ani, because the Maaser Ani doesn't exist. You haven't been mafresh it. You're saying this is a down payment on the Maaser Ani that I will be mafresh this season from my pomegranates.
That's an internal process. I don't have to embarrass the ani. Like
you don't have to embarrass the ani. No, it's generally speaking, it's always good not to embarrass the ani. That's, you know, our principle. What? You can give it to a kupat staka if it's a kupat staka for tomchei Shabbat, for food. right? Not for other things. We're almost done. So Bior Meiser's Meiser Oni, Meiser Sheni. So that's how. So and as if you do this, now, there is this thing called the Keren Masrot, which you can sign up for, where you make a payment every year to this organization Yerushalayim, and they save this coin for you. And then when twice a Shemitah, when it comes time to deal with this coin, they take care of it. You want to do that? Vakasha. It's not necessary. We have gotten into this bad habit of outsourcing all of our mitzvot. Once upon a time, our grandmothers used to salt meat. You'd go to the butcher. The butchers wouldn't do this, and you'd have to salt the grandmothers would have to salt it. Now, nobody does. Nobody even knows how to do it anymore. All types of things. We've outsourced a lot of our mitzvot to Trumot Masrot. We've outsourced. In the days of Chazal, you went to the shuk. In the days of the Mikdash, you went to the shuk and you bought tevil. And you took it home and you took Trumot Masrot yourselves. They didn't have mashgichim running around with two dot on the... You took care of it yourself.
It's now, such a serious offense, you don't
want to
get it wrong.
Seder, Basar B'chalav is also a serious offense. Chil Shabbos is also a serious offense. There are all types of serious offenses. You don't want to get it wrong. Things are complicated. It's good to know what you're doing. But the idea that the people live in Eretz Yisrael and they have fruit trees growing in their backyard and they don't know how to take Trumot Masrot, there's no reason that somebody can't handle being poda their own Meiser Sheni. You set up a coin, you tape it up into, go home now, tape it up inside your thing. Even if it's only once a year, you go cherry picking. So you need to, and twice during the Shemitah, you have to do this what's called vidui and biur masrot, where the coin is taken care of. We'll have shiurim about that in a couple of years next time. But you just missed it. The last one was this last Pesach.
Can you just quickly take your pile and just run through it?
Yes.
Here's
my pile. I take a drop more than... This is for everything. We'll start from the beginning. This is my pile of Lego fruit. I take 1.01%, a drop more than 1%, and I set it aside. I say the bracha, Lafish Trumot Masrot, if it's something I have to say a bracha from. If it's something that I don't have to say a bracha from, I go through the whole thing just without the brachot. I say that, now again, there is this Nusach Katsar, which appears in some of the Sidurim, where basically you do this, you set aside 1.1%, and you say, hocus pocus, aliocus, it all should be the way it's supposed to be, the way it's written in the Siddur. I think we can all handle actually reading through you. You can all read good Jewish writing, good Ivrit. I think we can all go through it. You can all read English, minimally. You can go through it. You can go through the whole Nusach. You take off 1.1%, and you say the 0.1% here at the tippy top is Truma. Then you say the 1%, what's left here, what I didn't make truma in this thing I set aside, plus another 9/10 that are left here. 9/10 plus 1/10 equals 10/10, meaning 10% of the whole thing, right? That is Meiser Rishon. So where's the Meiser Rishon right now? 9 parts of it are here at the tippy top. And 1 part of it is here. This Meiser Rishon, which is in this 1% here, right? That is 10% of all of the Meiser Rishon. 1% here, 9% there. 10% of all the Meiser Rishon is here. That is now Trumat Meiser. So what I've done, I've converted this 1.something% to be the Truma Gedola and the Trumat Meiser, you wrap it up in a mechubad way, you throw it away. Now you have the nine tenths of 10%, meaning 9% of what's left is the Meiser. A Levi can prove to me it's theirs, they can have it. I have a guy who calls himself a Levi, he's a pal of mine, I can give it to him. I give it to him and he says, you know what, I don't need so many. Let me take 2 or 3 of these slimy loquats. I'll give the rest back to you. Vakasha. Meiser Sheni. In a Meiser Sheni year, you take 10%. You don't have to physically separate it out. You say this 10% here on the south side I mean, that's the nusach. It could be any 10%.
A different 10%
than the Maaser Rishon. This 10%, I designate this 10% as the Maaser Sheni. I designate this as the Maaser Sheni. But I'm going to be pode it on a Shove Pruta. Not its full value, but by transferring it to this Shove Pruta, it becomes Michulal. Not, I mean, literally desecrated. I'm removing the Kedusha from it, and I'm transferring the Kedusha to the money, and now that it has been desacralized, now it's my property, now I'm allowed to eat it. If I'm doing it on Tevel Vadai, so then, and I'm being, during year 1, 2, 5, 4, and 5, I say the bracha for being pode Maaser Sheni. If it's a Maaser Oni year, so then I take 10%, I say, this I'm designating as Maaser Ani, and I either give to the Ani, or I do my calculation, and I make the payment.
The Maaser Sheni be next to the coin that you have in the cupboard?
The Maaser Sheni is redeemed on that coin that you set aside in the cupboard. Again, we didn't deal with Netzer Revai, the fourth year, which also has a similar pidyon process. During the fourth year, the whole thing is padui. There's no trumo to master from it. You get to keep it after you redeem it. We didn't go into those details.
The master, let's say you don't have a dinar, you have no idea what you're estimating at the beginning of the year. You set aside a certain amount, assuming that here and there you're going to be, you would give that money at the beginning, or you give that money?
You should give that money at the beginning as a down payment. Well, you know, it depends on it depends on what you have growing, whenever the beginning of your crops are going to be for that year. If you have nothing, so then you don't have to do this.
So
you haven't done anything because you don't have anything growing in your house. You live on the 10th floor. You don't have any property. You don't have any flower pots. You got nothing. Once a year, you go cherry picking. And you say, it's a Maaser Ani year. But you didn't set anything up. So either you can take those cherries and give them to the Aniyah. Or you can... If you are unable, it being late on Friday afternoon and your kids are sweaty because you've just come home from cherry picking, you can set aside the money. It would be better, what we say, zakin la adam shalo b'fanav, where you designate it, you literally transfer it to the property of a specific ani or aniya, and then you give it to them at some.
So you said the fanav could work, but they actually have to have that. Like, I have to know the money got to them before I can eat it, or.
No, because you've transferred it to that money, and now you're clean.
Even if I had to go back to my own house, assuming that the
kubat staka is used for aniyim, not for Torah projects or for.
We're doing that during the shnat maser ani to make sure you have.
Yeah, although again, I think it's better that it should. Again, it's better to set it up in advance so that it gets deducted automatically at the end of the year. You gave 200 shekel, but you didn't have that much. So at the end of the year, you're mevater, you cancel the debt, because really what it is, it's a loan, right? What you haven't deducted really is your money, but you're not going to go to the ani and say, there was 36 shekels left on my account, I'd like to withdraw it. So you at the end of the year, you're mevater on that loan, and you just give that to the ani. But again, the ani doesn't necessarily need to know all about this.
So
a big company. Well, it's not 10% of their stuff. It's 10% of what's left over after the Truman and the Mises. Yeah, so I think the companies have to give Maaser Ani. I think that's what they do. I think. I don't know how it works exactly. I don't know how the big companies do it, but I think that. Yeah. I hope we made this clearer and not more muddled. The point is you should do Truman to Maaser. I can stay for another couple of minutes if there's questions. Yeah. I'm sorry, say again? Yeah? Barbara, I can't hear you. Come up.
Thank you very much. Do you think
Yeah, you can call me. It's in the Gush phone. Sachs.
When you buy fruit at North, I'm pretty
sure. Oh, I'm sorry. One last thing. If you are on a teal and you're up north and you have to take Trimoto Masrot, you have to have all the fruit together, but that coin is back here in Efrat, that's okay. The coin doesn't need to be with you. You say, I'm being podeid on that coin that I designated and it's sitting back home. The coin itself does not need to be in your pocket or with you. It has to be your coin or a friend. A friend can let you be podeid on his... Yeah.
But the nut fruit that I'm buying up north, the store that's tied into Shumat, I'm taking Shumat Masa,
but
there's not a nut there, and the...
No, you have to take Shumat Masa, the Safek, without a bracha. Masa Ani does not have to be given from Safek. Maaser Ani does not need to be given from Safek, Truma.
So when I'm up north, I have to do Truma the Master without a bracha.
Without a bracha, because it's...
It's possible if they took it.
Sure. Because there are mashkichim in places, and even before, in other words, it depends on where the fruit is coming. If the fruit is coming from Kibbutz Adati, or from Tnuva, or from any middleman that has hashkacha, so then it will have been taken. You don't know. Like if you're in some little makolet someplace where you...
Do I have to say any of these designated sentences?
Yeah, you should say all of it without the bracha. Without the bracha. If you can't handle all of that, so then you don't have the thing with you, and you're out on a tiyul, and you want to eat the apples because everybody's hungry, so you set aside 1 point and a bit, and you say... You can just say it in your own language. You say, this part is the truma, and this... what's left here plus that is the meiser. Or you can say this. I've set aside this for the truma, and there's the meiser, and this is the trumat meiser, and it should all be done according to the way the nusach is back in the siddur that I have on the shelf at home or in the cabinet. That's what's called the nusach hakatzar. It works, but.
Now you say grape should have its own coin possibly because it's individual fruits. Okay. Is
that right? No. Because grapes are a higher level of chiyuv. Grapes are five trumas masus min haTorah, even though today everything is midrabanan.
Right.
So there's this idea that the coin on which you are podeh, that you shouldn't be podeh fruits of different levels of chiyuvim on the same coin.
And just grapes?
Well, in practice, you don't have any wheat at home.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it could be olives, if you have olives.
Any of the Sheva Minim?
No, it's not the Sheva Minim. It's
individual...
No, it's got nothing to do with it. It's because the Torah says, Digonecha, Dagan, Yitzar, Vitzirosh. Grain, the five grains, grapes, and olives.
Oh, awesome.
Those are the things that are Chayav Minat Torah. The other Sheva Minim are not Chayav Minat Torah in Shemot HaMashiach.
So this year is Master Sheni.